Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Hoops HD Report, a very special edition of Hoops HD Report tonight. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. I want to start by introducing our usual panel of panelists here. I'll begin with John Stalica joining us. John, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing quite well, Chad, and judging by our special guest bio, I guess I'm not the only former pep band or marching band member in the ranks.
A current pep band marching band member. We'll get to that in a second here. But first, also join us Joby Fortson there with his yellow headgear.
Hey.
And David Griggs back with us as always.
Absolutely. Like, I thought drinking whiskey and watching basketball was the perfect way to spend Valentine's Day, but she got really mad. I don't get it.
But, of course, we have a very special guest from CBS Sports joining us tonight, Jerry Palm, one of the preeminent bracketologists, if not the preeminent bracketologist, at least in my opinion, in the entire country. And, Jerry, it's a huge honor for us to have you on tonight. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Well, better now. although I could use some of that whiskey. Can you pass that through on this Google Hangout? It's not much of a hangout.
Absolutely,
can't
yeah.
share the whiskey.
Yeah, we had a little bit of issues here. We almost just had a video of Jerry's chair instead of Jerry himself, but I think we have things working.
The chair's not more personality, actually.
Yeah.
I usually do my videos in front of my bar, so that would have been more appropriate. Had I known we were going to have whiskey, I would have tried to do it down there.
That would have been fun. Oh, I need to come over to your house.
Jerry, just since you are our guest tonight, we wanted to spend a few minutes, obviously, just talking about, give you a chance to talk, tell us a little bit about yourself, I guess. I mean, I've known you for years, since back in your days when you were in college RPI, and we followed you then, and now you're at CBS Sports. But I guess my question to you is, how did you get into the college basketball and become the great bracketologist that you have become?
Well, it goes back, this is my 23rd year, I think, of doing this. I started with the 93-94 season. That was a year that they changed the RPI, and I saw an article about it. Had a computer, too much time on my hands, a new database tool I wanted to try, and this is like right after Al Gore invented the internet, so school websites or anything like that. I gathered all the data by going through old newspapers and the agate type and the scoreboard page, and threw all the data into my database and calculated the RPI, and I shared it on news groups, which, as you guys probably know, is the caveman writing on the wall version of message boards and stuff that we have now, and thinking that, really fewer people than we have on this chat would be interested in it. As it turns out, more people were interested in it than that, and, the next year, I had an AOL account. Remember AOL?
Oh, yeah.
They gave us the ability to have a web page, so I started storing it there. But I was doing this all for my own edification. I think I started doing brackets that second year, or at least publishing a bracket that second year. And but the third year is really where the miracle of the story occurs. A guy who covers Penn State found my stuff. And the miracle, of course, is that Penn State is good once a generation in basketball, and that happened to be the year that they were good.
Right.
And so a guy covering Penn State finds me. He starts talking to me. He likes me. He tells two friends. They tell two friends. Shampoo commercial breaks out. And within about 2 years, everybody covering college basketball knew who I was because I was the only one who actually attempted to calculate the RPI and bring it to the public. And I guess, in a sense, take some of the mystery away from it. But like I said, I was really doing it for myself, and other people happened to be interested. And once sports writers find you, that's pretty much it. I couldn't have stopped it. I suppose I could have locked my door, turned off my phone, gotten the fetal position under my desk, but they'd have probably broke into my house anyway. So I really, it's something that found me more than I found it, but once the ride started, I went along with it, and football started the BCS in 98, and so I got involved with that too. It was pretty easy to adapt what I was doing to that, and it's one thing leads to another, and next thing you know, I'm working for CBS.
That's great. You mentioned football. I know you do the poll game predictions there on CBS on their website as well, and
Yeah. But CBS invented the tournament, so that was nice.
A lot of people think I invented the RPI. That's not exactly true.
Well, because they always used an RPI. Now I'm showing why, but didn't it used to be a third, and a third, and they altered it?
I don't know the entire history of it. Yeah. It started in 81,
yeah.
I want to say. A couple Stanford professors helped because the Stanford AD was on the committee at the time. And you know, when it changed in 93, 94, the old version was 20/40/40. And that's when they changed to 25/50/25. But it could have had another change before that. I just wouldn't know.
Okay.
Well, they also used to have what they called the secret adjustment. That was right. Thankfully, that's gone now
and
as
that's
well.
The only major change since that time was in 2005 or before that season. They did away with the secret adjustments and added the home and road waiting. And now the formula is open to anybody, you know, like me back then who had a computer and too much time on their hands. And there's probably a lot of people like that now.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry, we want to actually get in and discuss the teams and the brackets that we are right now here in this season. And I wanted to actually ask you about the way that you choose your teams, because there's a lot of things that I've seen in your most recent bracket, in fact, that I agree with, some things that I just don't agree with, and I'm sure I know you talk to a lot of people on Twitter and you respond to them and you hear a lot of disagreements, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
maybe that's an understatement. But
yep.
Is there one thing that is the most important factor for you when you look at a team, be it quality wins, bad losses, road neutral record, or do you find it more to be just a balancing of everything?
Yeah, there is, and it's like this with the committee too, there is no most important factor. And oftentimes it's going to be about what stands out when you're comparing two teams or several teams together. The committee can do, I think, as many as four at a time. I usually am only looking at two at a time, but I'm not 10 people. I'm only one, so I don't really need to look at multiples at a time. But it's usually just kind of what stands out, you know, because if you're looking at two teams, their quality wins might be largely similar, but one team's got a couple of bad losses and the other team doesn't. So in this case, you know, the bad losses are what stands out. And sometimes it's, you know, the quality wins that stand out. Sometimes it's top 50, it's top 100. Sometimes it's strength of schedule. It really just varies from comparison to comparison.
I guess the other question that I had to you before we actually get into the teams is this year itself, at least in my opinion, I think we've seen more top teams going down week after week and maybe more parity in college basketball than I honestly can remember in maybe the last 10, 15 years. I don't know if everybody else would agree with me on that or not, but it's almost been a crazy year, and I think we're setting up for a crazy tournament that'll probably end with 4-1 seeds in the Final Four, right, after all this.
Yeah, right. Well, good luck filling out a bracket this year, because it is really crazy. My editor about a month ago says college basketball is drunk, and that's pretty much the way it's been this year. I don't think I've had a week yet where one of my number one seeds didn't lose, and you know, I've got, you know, the four number ones in my bracket now: Kansas, Oklahoma, Iowa, Villanova. I think it's quite reasonable to expect each of those teams will lose again before their conference tournaments. And then obviously Kansas and Oklahoma can't both win their conference tournament. So I think there's a dozen teams that could still make a run at a number one seed. And that's just ridiculous for this time of year.
I mean, we'll get into this as we go on to the brackets. I think that there's a little more parity, but I also think part of the reason is that you have a lot of the number one and two seeds that are in similar conferences. If you looked at Kentucky last year, they didn't have to play any protected seeds on the road. I think they played one, and it was Louisville, whereas Kansas, Iowa, Oklahoma, they're all playing multiple protected seeds on the road, so it's harder to win those games. So, but anyway, that's right.
Well, that could be part of it, but it's been going on all year. I mean, you know, it happened in non-conference play, too. I mean, there just hasn't been, you know, last year we had a dominant team. Kentucky was a team, you know, everybody thought could go 40-0, and probably regardless of whatever league they were in. But, you know, that was the one story of college basketball last year, and this year there isn't one story. There's a ton, but there are no dominant teams. There's just a lot of very good to great teams.
Right. Well, I guess why don't we talk about some of these one seeds you have up here, Jerry. And Oklahoma, despite losing this weekend at home to Kansas, still on your one line. I agree with you, but I guess there may be people out there that say, hey, you're one seed, you lose. Shouldn't you be falling down?
Well, you have to keep in mind that everything is relative. You know, Oklahoma wasn't the only team that played this weekend or lost this weekend. You know, Virginia lost, Oregon lost. Oregon lost twice last week. Yeah. And, you know, this isn't a poll, all right? One game is one at this time of year, like 25th of your total profile. And losing to another team that's really good, like Kansas, is not as damaging as losing to Stanford or losing to Wisconsin or losing to Oklahoma State. I mean, it's all relative, and but the committee and the committee, of course, it doesn't even start looking at these teams and as collectively until, you know, the Wednesday before selections. But doing this, you know, the main thing, at least for me, is you don't overreact to one game. You know, one game is a part of who you are. It's actually, in this case, about 4% of who you are. And you're judged on your entire season, not what you did last week.
Yeah. And unlike, I mean, when Oregon lost, they did not mess around. I mean, they lost good.
I was in the Cal game, and Cal, I think, was up 20-0 in warm-ups.
Yeah, I think they were.
One team that I think we've had a lot of controversy about, actually, this year, maybe not controversy, although David got into a bit of a Twitter argument last weekend about it, but it's Maryland.
My favorite thing was that Van Pelt was arguing a puppet.
Yeah, he was. Scott Van Pelt was.
It's funny, I'll hear from Scott. I don't really hear from – it's weird for me to hear from ESPN people because – you know, they've got Joel and Artie down the hall, basically, although he's not there all the time. But still, you know, I hear from Scott about Maryland at least once a year. Scott and I will have a conversation about Maryland's fate in life. I just think it's interesting, but I always look forward to talking to Scott because he's reasonable, intelligent. Yes, he's a fan, but he also understands that, you know, being a fan doesn't always help the conversation. So he's pretty good about having realistic conversation about what's going on with this team, which most fans do not.
Well, this Maryland team, you have them down on the 3 line. I think nationally, again, you just said that these aren't rankings, but I think the rankings still have them in the top 6 or 7 in the country, even after the loss to Wisconsin.
I don't even look at the polls, so I couldn't even.
You should.
But I guess with that Wisconsin loss, like my question is, you know, our group here, at least, kind of thought this Maryland team was a bit of a fraud so far this year, picking up wins but not against the top competition.
Correct.
Did you think they got kind of exposed this weekend and maybe they really are, you know, pretty darn overrated?
I don't know. I mean, they've beaten better teams than Wisconsin at home, you know. But the reason that I've had them down the list is that they don't have the high quality wins that the other teams that they're competing with do. And two of the teams I have ahead of them beat Maryland. So, you know, before they beat Iowa, their best win was probably Connecticut. And Connecticut is, you know, okay. But, you know, that's it. You know, they beat Iowa. Iowa was their first top 25 win of the season. And it was what? The last week of January before they even played beat a team of that caliber. You know, they lost at Michigan, and Michigan, again, an okay team, you know, but they just didn't have – when you look at the teams above them and the high-quality wins that they have, Maryland just doesn't compare. And so even though they only had at the time 3 losses, it just didn't – to me, it just didn't stack up. It's not number one seed worthy. And, you know, before the Wisconsin game, they had 3 top 50 RPI wins and the highest seed that ever got with only 3 top 50 RPI wins was a 3. And so that actually felt right for Maryland. I mean, that wasn't a basis of my decision. That's something I looked at after the fact. But the committee wants to see higher quality wins from higher seeded teams, and that's usually how it's going to work out.
And another thing about Maryland, I don't evaluate teams exactly the same way you do because I'm not really trying to guess the committee, but I think in college basketball, like when you're playing at home, you have 2 advantages. One is the familiarity of the venue, the floor, the rims, shooting backgrounds, and the other is the atmosphere. And I don't think Maryland's proven that they can win without those 2 advantages against tournament caliber teams. Yeah. And they certainly haven't proven that they can win with it going against them. You know, they didn't beat Michigan. They sweated out Ohio State. They sweated out, I don't have their profile right in front of me.
Well, they won it Wisconsin by 3. They won it Ohio State by 5.
By losing to Wisconsin at home, they did themselves a favor by made their road win at Wisconsin look better, right?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Van Pelt was joking with me before that game. He says, well, we should lose to Wisconsin so it adds to our top 50 wins, which it actually did. You know, sort of backdoor to top 50 win there, you know, but they're 46, so who knows if they'll be there for long. But, it's not even just, you know, like top 50. Top 50 is kind of like the at-large pool usually. I mean, now with a 68-team tournament, there's going to be, you know, three teams or so outside the top 50 to get at-large bids and some inside the top 50 that won't. And one of Maryland's top 50 wins is Princeton. Princeton's a nice team. They're probably not one of the top 50 teams in the country, and they're not an at-large quality team for sure. And if you look at, you know, the number of teams that are at-large quality or better that Maryland has beaten, it's Iowa, Purdue, Connecticut, and now Wisconsin, and Wisconsin is borderline, and in my mind, Connecticut is too.
Jerry, as we talk about, you mentioned Cal very briefly, and I want to go over there because this has been a huge debate we've been having with David, especially. This Cal profile, one true road win, and it was a game they had to sweat out at Wyoming.
Yeah, overtime.
You got them as a 7 seed, which is fairly solidly in the field, though.
Yep.
And that may be a record. I don't know. You track these things better than I do, but that may be a record, only one road win and being a solid NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, that's true. It's because they've beaten so many good teams, albeit at home, and it's entirely possible that I've got them a little too high. I just don't like a lot of the teams below them, you know. It's better to be a home court hero than a no court hero. And, you know, Cal hasn't really proven they can win away from home. And I think at some point they're going to have to. You know, at some point they're going to have to beat, even if it's somebody like Washington, who's, you know, a bubble team, or, you know, or beat somebody in the conference tournament away from home. But this is a committee that took UCLA last year, and UCLA was the worst road or neutral team that has, in the 22 years that I've been doing this, to get selected for the tournament. Cal is in that boat. So, you know, if this is a committee that's going to take them, then I don't feel too bad about Cal, but I can see the argument that they're probably overseeded a little bit as a 7. By the way, I think I've got them as my lowest 7, which would put them at 28.
And they are at least very heroic when they are at home. I mean, they're...
Oh, yeah. They're taking out Oregon and stuff. Pavilion, everybody would be in trouble.
David, you're the one who's a big fan of the road win being such a huge stat.
Well, again, I think Cal is good enough to beat good teams when they have those two advantages over good teams. I don't think they're good enough to win without them, and I certainly don't think they're good enough to win with it going against them. And to me, I mean, winning on the road in college basketball is really hard. Even teams that are nowhere near the NIT win more than half their home games usually. And what sets you apart is being in the top 15, top 20% of teams is, can you win away from home? And to me, Cal can't. Now, again, I'm not trying to guess the committee. There's categorical reasons to take Cal, but I would make a case that Cal doesn't belong at all.
Well, if I were on the committee personally, I would put more of an emphasis on being able to win away from home than the committee, I think, does. But, you know, like you said, I'm trying to predict what the committee's going to do. Cal's got a lot of good wins. They've all come at home, but, you know, it's even at a 7 with this group of teams, they may be too high, but, you know, if I were on the committee, I would tend to favor teams that can win away from home and maybe don't have as many good wins as Cal does, but that's just me.
Right.
I think another team that's going to be interesting in how they're placed right now is going to be North Carolina. I've noticed that you have them on the 3 line. Is this because they only have 5 wins against teams that would probably be in the tournament as of this bracket right now?
Yep. They're Maryland, except they beat Maryland. But it's basically the same profile. Actually, one of the differences is that Northern Iowa loss is worse than anything Maryland has. But it's basically the same thing. They've beaten some good teams. They haven't beaten really any great teams except maybe Maryland, and they beat them at home. And it's a profile that needs better wins to get to the top line. But you look at their schedule, home and home with Duke, Miami at home, at Virginia. They got Syracuse again before the ACC tournament. So, you know, if North Carolina really is that good, and this is the team everybody thought, you know, they were preseason number one, you know, if they can run through that schedule and pile up some quality wins, they can make a push for the top line really without too much trouble.
Right.
They might not even need teams to lose to jump them.
And a bit of statistical component on that Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa today cracked the top 100, and they've actually been rolling up. So all of a sudden, the loss isn't the quote-unquote infamous bad loss.
Yeah, it's still a bad loss.
And it was without Marcus Page, so I don't think that's a factor.
I really don't care. And I don't think the committee cares, by the way. That's something that's really been overblown. This week, I'm sure you guys noticed, I think it was one of my colleagues, John Rothstein, tweeted something about Syracuse being evaluated as if the games with Jim Boeheim missed didn't happen. And that's just a bunch of crap. There's no way they can do that.
It's my understanding, and again, that the committee takes it into consideration for opponents. So in other words, if you beat North Carolina without a key player, you're not going to get as much credit as if you'd beaten them at full strength. But as far as North Carolina in and of itself, I don't think they give them a pass for when they don't have a key player.
Your profile is who you are. I mean, the committee can't sit there and say, well, that game didn't happen. And they can't sit there and say, well, you would have won if that player was there, that coach was there. They don't know. Those are assumptions you can't make. So you are who you are. And really, the only time that I have noticed an actual impact because of an injury or a suspension is when somebody is lost for the year. You have seen cases where teams have been docked seeding because a key player is not there, and it's usually due to a late injury. I mean, Kenyon Martin's the most famous case, but more recently than that, Robbie Hummel for Purdue about 4 years ago went down in February, and Purdue had a 2-seed profile and got a 4, and you know that's how the committee typically reacts to that sort of thing. It impacts seed. If it impacts anything, it's not going to impact selection. And the impact is usually negative, not positive.
So in other words, St. John's is going to be a scarlet letter that's not going away for Syracuse.
Yeah, but on the other hand, they've in a sense, they've played that away. You know, I mean, it's not going to get completely ignored. Yeah. If they're compared to a team that's like them, but that team didn't lose to St. John's, then it hurts them. But I think Syracuse has proven, you know, largely that game is more of an outlier than what is typical of them.
I think the discussion of injuries is actually a good segue to another team that's below your first four right now, Jerry, but you have them in as an auto bid, and that's this Wichita State team. And I understand them dropping, having lost 2 out of 3, but a lot of their losses did come without Van Vliet there when he was injured. And they still played close, and I think all except for the Iowa game in those losses. And maybe they really do belong.
Like 10. Iowa beat them by 23, and the others were single digits. Seton Hall was overtime.
Yeah, but on the other hand, though, aren't you penalizing the team that's going to play them? Because if I'm a 4-seed or a 5-seed, I suddenly see Wichita State on the other side of me in the bracket. I'm scared to death.
Why? I mean, they just lost to Illinois State and Northern Iowa. I mean, you want to talk about Van Vliet's injuries? Their two worst losses came with him. So, you know, they beat Utah at home. That's all they've done this year. This is not an at-large quality team this year. And if they need an at-large bid, that means another loss to a team that's, you know, really not very good, relatively speaking. Not tournament quality, anyway. Right. So, you know, I don't think Wichita State is being treated unfairly in my bracket. And, you know, the committee might view it differently, but, you know, If you're gonna play that injury card, you know, well, we lost these games without our guy, you better not have worse losses with that guy because it essentially validates all of those others.
It's a great point. I really like that. Search a few other teams here. A couple teams that I saw in your field this week, I think just might have moved in because of what's happened in the past week or so. Three of them, actually: Texas Tech, Alabama, and Wisconsin.
Oh, you left out LSU, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, LSU, I think you had in as an auto bid winner previously.
Oh, yeah. Last Monday I did, and then they dropped out, and now they're back in as an at-large. Yeah.
And they're first four anyway, so it's a discussion point.
But how about this Texas Tech deal? You have it at the 9 line, despite I think they lost 8 out of 9 at one point or something close to that.
Something like that. Yeah, they did at least 7 out of 8. But you know that's just part of who they are. Losing 7 out of 8 doesn't disqualify you. You know, it's just, you know, you have to do things to make up for that. And lately they have. You know, the last week they beat Iowa State at home. They won at Baylor, which was really the thing missing. Yeah. You know, you talk about road performance. I mean, that was the thing that was missing. This was a home court hero. Now they get a high-quality win on the road at Baylor. And, you know, yeah, their numbers aren't great. They're, you know, 4-7 top 50 and 6-8 in the top 100. Those aren't great numbers, but I don't have them all that high in the bracket either. They're still a bubble team, but they're now a team that has high-quality wins. They've got a decent number of them. They've won on the road. I don't see a reason to leave them out right now.
My thing with Texas Tech, at least prior to this week where they did have the big wins, I was impressed with them, but especially when you look at their out-of-conference schedule, I was impressed with them in the sense that I was impressed with John Belushi in Animal House in the cafeteria stuffing his face full of donuts and cupcakes. It's like, oh, man, that is amazing. It seems to me that most of their record is bloated up on home wins against teams that don't play well on the road. But, yeah. Again, if I had to make a case for them after this week, I could.
Who does play well on the road? Yeah. You know? Well, actually, I think their RPI is influenced by the fact that they've got three wins at home against teams that are winning smaller conferences.
Yeah.
They've got South Dakota State, who leads the Summit. They got Little Rock, who leads the Sun Belt. They got Hawaii, who leads the WAC. That's three of their. Yeah,
those are the three teams that they've beaten that have winning road records prior to this week. So, yeah.
But so I mean that's, you know, in a sense it's kind of those aren't really at large quality teams, but those will be 13 seeded type teams. Maybe one of them will be a 14, depending on how all things shakes out. But those are going to be teams that are going to get a shot to win their first game. You know, get a game that they could potentially win in the NCAA tournament. So they're not bad, you know, they're not bad wins. They may not be like South Dakota State's in the top 50. That's probably not a top 50 win, but those are not awful teams that they beat, but I think it's kind of inflated their RPI a little bit.
Yeah. Let me throw one other team out here that has three very bad losses. They're playing right now, in fact, and winning as we record this. That's the Monmouth Hawks out of the Metro Atlantic. You've got them in, I guess I'm not going to call it solidly, but you have them on the nine line also.
Yeah.
Despite the three losses.
Yeah, they're number 36.
Yeah, which kind of tells me that they may have room for another loss to still make the field.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, they're a tough team to figure out because they've got some really good non-conference wins, and you know those three bad losses. I mean, that the committee took one team before with three 200-plus losses, and that was USC. You know, the first year they went to 68, and that was disastrous. But you know, this team is a little different. Because they have to go on the road to play all these games. You know, USC, you know, built up some good wins, you know, especially at home and conference and all of that. But, you know, they played USC, actually, twice. Home, I'm sorry, neutral and road. Dayton neutral, Notre Dame neutral. They almost beat Dayton, too. Yeah. They won at UCLA. They won at Georgetown. You know, UCLA and Georgetown are probably not going to the tournament, but those aren't bad teams, and they played them on the road and won. You know, Kentucky didn't win at UCLA, but Monmouth did. So, you know, it's a place where, you know, the committee, I feel, prefers a good win to more positive than a bad loss is a negative.
Agree 100%.
They've got three really bad losses, though. So Monmouth, I think, could be an interesting case if they actually need an at-large bid. If they don't, I would not be surprised to see them in an 8-9 game or possibly as a 10. I don't think they can get much higher than that.
So they better be losing to, like, Siena in the conference final.
That's the thing. To assume Monmouth is going to win that tournament is assuming a lot. It's at Siena.
No question. Siena's home team.
Yeah, and now, granted, they did win at Siena, but it's the only team that has won at Siena. Right. It's not going to be easy to do it again.
It's not a gimme. That's true. And if they do lose at Siena, I mean, I would rather see Monmouth get an at-large bid than Middle Tennessee a few years ago, who was like 75-3 and it hadn't beaten anybody, you know, outside the top 200 all year. You know, that was ridiculous. Monmouth, to me, has at least shown they can beat tournament-quality opposition, and if they happen to get caught on someone's home floor in the conference tournament, well, I don't know. I would rather see Monmouth in the tournament than some team like, you know, think Bonaventure hasn't beaten anybody, you know.
Yeah.
Or Gonzaga.
Exactly. True. I mean, true. Gonzaga hasn't really earned it this year.
No.
Is this like is this really just wrong by the Metro Atlantic to be doing this then? I mean, having the conference tournament at a predetermined site, and it's going to end up being the second or third best team in the conference hosting it, penalizing a really good team like Monmouth and making them maybe miss the tournament because of it.
If I'm running a league like that, I would let the regular season champion host the tournament. Logistical problems to doing that, but if I could at all make that happen, I would want to give my regular season champion the best opportunity to advance. Actually, if I'm running that league, I may just say, screw it, I'm not having a tournament, and put my regular season champion in. So it guarantees my best team is going to play and represent us in the tournament, but that's not how life is anymore. Right. Even the Ivy's talking about throwing a tournament together. I give my champion the Horizon this year has decided to go away from regular season champion hosting, and they're going to have it in Detroit.
That's a terrible idea.
A tournament somewhere. If you're going to have a tournament somewhere, why there? But you know, they're going to have their tournament in Detroit, which, you know, if I'm Valparaiso, who's likely going to win this league, I'm not real happy about. But of course, Valparaiso can't beat Wright State anyway, so I guess it doesn't matter.
If I have a conference like the Horizon, I want it at a neutral court. Let's take it to Vegas. Let's take it to Hawaii. Let's go to a real neutral court. Come on.
Even Indianapolis, you know.
Yeah.
Although Indianapolis is a little bit out of their footprint now, but, you know, Chicago, anywhere, you know, Detroit.
My thing is, like, I know it can be done. We've seen teams way inside the bubble from the one-bid leagues. Siena got a 9 seed 1 year. I want to say Davidson got a 10. Murray State got a 6. Now, I know none of those
Wichita's first trip to the Final Four came from an 8-9 game.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't want to say, like, it can be done. Now, those teams didn't need at-large bids, but when you're 2-3 lines inside the bubble, generally that means you would have gotten one had you needed it. So it can be done, but realistically, I just think that for Monmouth, you're really setting yourself up to fail when all finishing first does for you is that you wear white on someone else's court.
Right. I agree. Yeah. You know, not the way I would do it, but that's why I'm not a conference commissioner, among the many reasons why I'm not a conference.
Yeah, because what I was going to say was Valpo has another advantage over Monmouth in that they at least have a ladder format where they get a bye into the semifinals. What kind of damage would Monmouth be looking at if they lost to, let's say, a Ryder or a Niagara in the opening round of the Metro Atlantic tournament?
Yeah, I think it gets hard to take them if they take a loss that bad that late. Yeah. You know, when your season's on the line, I mean, to me, you know, it's a... It's how are you going to do in a pressure situation? How are you going to do in a tournament situation? One and done. You're gone. You know, if you're losing to a team like that, in that kind of situation, you probably don't belong in the NCAA tournament.
Yep. Well, what about the two other teams that you have below your 12 line also? Little Rock and Chattanooga, both with very gaudy records, top 35 RPI, at least for Chattanooga. Little Rock's not that good. Again, these are teams that would have to take a bad loss if they needed an at-large bid, though. But very gaudy records for both of them. And Chattanooga, a huge win at Dayton.
Dayton, yeah.
Yeah, Chattanooga, now, Little Rock, they won at Tulsa, they won at San Diego State. Those are, at best, bubble teams, and I'm not sure either would make the tournament, as an at-large. So I don't know that they really got much of a leg to stand on. Chattanooga's a little more interesting because of the win at Dayton and Georgia, who's also a bubble team, but... You know, if they're taking a loss to, I mean, who can beat them in their league that is not going to really damage them? I don't know. It's but again, Chattanooga a better case than Middle Tennessee, but they've only got two top 100 RPI wins. They're not going to get another one, and you know, you don't get an at-large bid without at least four. So I mean, that's other than Middle Tennessee. You know, everybody else has got at least four. So, I don't know if they would do that with Chattanooga. I would say my guess would be no.
Well, I know your first four as of today were UConn, LSU, St. Joe's, and Cincinnati in. You had GW, Seton Hall, Tulsa, and Washington as your top four teams out.
Tournament's too big.
David, that's the problem. We got too many teams in the tournament.
You are complaining to the wrong person.
None of the eight teams belong in, correct?
Yes. But
Joby, I think you ought to make a case about another team that he didn't even list there. Let me throw it over to you.
The second place team, and are we talking about our favorite team, the second place team in the WAC right now? You know.
No, I was thinking about a team out of the ACC that you wanted to make a case
for. Oh, yeah. No, I won't make a case for it.
Okay.
But you look at Clemson. They have very similar type wins profiles to the Alabamas, the Texas Techs that we're talking about. Clemson does have the slip up at Virginia Tech recently in their early season struggles, which you know Minnesota better than any of us. But the
Minnesota?
Yeah.
Minnesota State High School Tournament.
I know. They're awful.
They got to get better before they're awful.
Yeah.
Clemson basically turned
it around, and there's even a pathway for them to be a protected seed in the ACC tournament, the double bye. Yeah. And with legitimate wins getting them there. I mean, it's not like, oh, the schedule mix up and it's unbalanced. They actually would be getting legitimate wins for their only major loss recently besides Virginia Tech, their annual North Carolina loss on Chapel Hill. What do you see that Clemson has to do to get over the hump, to get into the tournament, given that they have their collection of good wins? What do they need to do to erase those bad losses?
They need quantity at this point. I mean, they're only five games above 500. You know, it's there's margin for error is pretty much zero. Their non-conference strength of schedule is 328. Wow. When you've got the wins that they have and an RPI of 88, there's a reason for that. Okay, in their case, this is a team that's 9-9 against the top 200 teams in the RPI. That does not count the loss to Minnesota.
So what you're saying is that they have as many top 200 wins as some of the teams on the one. Actually, they don't.
They have as many top 200 wins as
Clemson
has
little,
top 50 wins.
Yeah, we could say that about Maryland for a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, the realistic path to the tournament for Clemson is to win the conference championship, win the tournament. That's the realistic path. They've got three road games left on their schedule. They haven't shown an ability to win any of them.
No.
Well, okay, maybe Boston College, maybe. But no, they lost. They've lost to worse teams than that already. So no, it's.
There aren't very many of those.
Clemson may have a path to a protected seed. They've got four non-contenders left on the schedule in Virginia at home. They're not going to beat Virginia probably, although they might. But you know, the road game at NC State. They're not going to win that. They're not going to win at Georgia Tech. They might win at Boston College. They should beat BC at home, but what have they done if they do
If they run the table, though, and everybody goes
what, if they win the next four, ask me again.
All right, you got it.
Okay. Well,
I told the Ohio State person basically, Ohio State's got a bad profile in a different way. But, that's what I said. What's their realistic path to an at-large bid? I said there isn't one. But if they win the next four, ask me again. So that's how I feel about Clemson.
I guess one of the that I saw has dropped out of your field entirely, not even your first four out, is VCU, Jerry. And was it because some type of curse when you were there? Or...
Yeah. I they might what be thinking that. You know, it's felt bad about that, you know, because I caused the last three-pointer at the GW game to fall short, you know. I just got my hand. Because the force is with me. VCU just doesn't have, you know, they just haven't done enough. You know, their wins are St. Joe's and St. Bonnie. You know, they won at Davidson. They won at Middle Tennessee. It's just not enough to overcome the losses. They played a good schedule. They just didn't beat any of those teams. And, you know, part of the problem is they weren't ready yet. You know, you've got a new coach, and even though he comes, you know, as having been an assistant there before, it's still a transition. And, you know, it's just not. It takes a while to do that, but the home loss to GW really hurts. Then you go out and lose to UMass the next time out. Oh, yeah, I mean, that's in a sense, it's almost like letting GW beat you twice.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got to go to GW still. They got to go to Dayton still. You know, it's not over for VCU. They're not that far out, but, you know, they're not going to get back in beating Rhodey and Richmond and George Mason. I mean, they're going to have to take their act on the road, and they've already won some road games, so it's not like they can't do it. It's just that, you know, this little bit of a slump that they had pushed them from barely in to barely out.
It was kind of funny. On Thursday of last week, I was talking to someone about how much I liked Will Wade and how they got off to a slow start, but how well I thought VCU was playing and how I thought he was responsible for Chattanooga being as good and as deep as they are. And then 3 hours later, Chattanooga goes and loses to West Carolina, where I think the five of us could beat them. And right. VCU goes
and that includes the puppet, right?
Will Wade.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, a rough week, I guess, for Will. You know, but, yeah, I mean, VCU is fine. And, of course, you know, you get to the conference tournament, you know, they go into that event with a lot of confidence because they do so well in it. So, you know, I'm not ruling VCU out by, you know, the VCU is a much better chance to get back into the tournament than either of the teams we just talked about.
I guess the question I was going to ask in regards to VCU is, do they have to do something like Davidson last year where they at least win a share of it or win it outright like the Wildcats did last year?
It was a different league last year. This league isn't as strong. So it's not really a matter of winning the league. You know, it's that winning the league doesn't guarantee them anything unless they're winning the conference tournament. That guarantees them something, but a regular season title isn't going to guarantee him anything this year.
I got to ask, point of clarification, doesn't it give you a procedural advantage? Because instead of being...
It's your name on the board, and then they vote off most of them the first thing they do.
Okay.
So VCU doesn't need to win the regular season title to get their name on the board. And if they do enough otherwise, I mean, winning the regular season title, they do control their own destiny, at least for a share, because they get to play at Dayton at the end of the regular season. But... I mean, realistically, they're not going to have a lot of control probably over whether or not they win the regular season title, unless they do, obviously, win all the way out.
I guess one other team I wanted to mention to you, Jerry, noticeably absent from your board, as the champion out of the WAC, I did not see the Grand Canyon Antelopes for some reason.
Yeah, largely due to ineligibility.
Oh, okay.
Well, we got a petition going. We are...
I saw that.
Last time I saw, we were about 99,800.
Yes. And now that I know you're all lawyers, I understand why.
on a serious note
I started calculating the RPI because I'm a computer guy with too much time on my hands.
Yes, exactly.
But from an RPI standpoint, Grand Canyon has a chance to finish the top 100 as an RPI. And I think we at least Dave and I are looking at this. That'll be the first time a transitional team ever finished in the top 100.
Oh, probably, yeah.
It's been an amazing job that Thunder Dan has.
They've done great. They've had a great year. You know, it's just...
His goal is to top 25.
One year too early.
Right. Yeah, but it is. It's hard to come up. It's you got so much working against you. You know, when you look at some of the teams, NJIT, who's eligible this year, I think they had a stretch where they lost 59 out of 60 or something like that.
Playing as an independent, which is even harder.
Right. IUPUI, and they actually won the league shortly after they were eligible. I think they won four or five games the whole time that they were a transitional team. So,
as we call them in Indiana, we call them Ooey-Pooey.
Yeah, so, yeah, they really are doing well. And it's something that we're obviously just – well, no, we just have too much free time on our hands.
That's okay.
But nice win at San Diego State. That'll always – we'll always have San Diego State.
David, Joby, or John, any other questions for Jerry here?
How much differentiate, and this is something that we opened up with, we talked about the one line. What about your two, what about the two and the three line, or I guess just the two, because right now it looks like there's a lot of blur between the one and the two to where I wouldn't be surprised. I think any one out of the eight could end up on the one easily.
I think you could go down to the threes. I think any of those 12 could legitimately make a run at a number one seed, and it wouldn't be it wouldn't require a significant step up in play from what they're currently doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's college basketball this year. And usually by now, we can identify a couple of teams that we know are going to be ones, and then there's a fight for the last couple of spots. We may go into March with none of those spots 100% secure.
We could, yeah.
Hey, Jerry, I have a question. It's a fun question. It's a completely an opinion one. Last year, we pegged in early February. We kind of got around and said, okay, what team do you think will come out of the blue because of the schedule is set up, they're a good team, et cetera, that no one's talking about that's going to be in the discussion and in this tournament? Purdue was actually, your alma mater was that team. and do you see a team, and it could be Oregon State or Alabama or some of the teams we've already discussed, do you see a team kind of rising like a phoenix over these last few weeks that we're just not talking about right now, that all of a sudden may not be at large worthy right now, but has the potential to jump into it and no one will see it coming?
No one will see it coming.
Or very few will see it coming.
Or this team that rises high from where they are right now to way up.
Boy, let me think.
Nebraska. 10 miles. Destroy that.
I would guess if I have to pick somebody, and I don't know, I'm picking it with on absolutely no faith probably, but I'd probably go with someone like Tulsa.
Yeah, that's
because that league isn't so strong that they couldn't make a charge. And you know, it's they're good enough to do it, but they haven't played quite to their level yet. And if they can get it going just a little bit stronger, you know, I think Tulsa's a team that could possibly make that run. But like I said, I say that without complete faith. I had a lot more faith in Purdue last year than I would in saying that about Tulsa this year.
Yeah, I have no faith in Frank Hay.
Yeah, and that's why, actually. that's why I say it with less confidence than...
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, I guess on that note, we do want to thank Jerry for joining us. Jerry, it's been a lot of fun, and we do appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule to come in and join us here today and talk a little college hoops.
I was glad to do it. Thanks, guys. It was fun.
All right. Okay. So we're going to stick. I mean, are we going to run through the right? Let's see. You can stick around if you want, Jerry. But are we going to run through the rest of the conferences?
We just want to very quickly just touch on a couple of the major conferences that we didn't speak about, and I thought maybe we'd just spend a few minutes talking about I guess one of them that we just mentioned at the end there is the American Conference, where Temple is now sole possession of first place.
That's unbelievable. I noticed today that you said you liked Temple more than John, and after I crashed the car, after reading that, I was like...
Temple's actually made it all the way up. they're an ashes team to a degree right now. They've been doing it all year, but the bad parts of their profile are starting to be in such the rearview mirror. Maybe I think Temple might be inside the bubble, actually. Another loss to East Carolina away, and away we go. Forget about that. But
since that East Carolina loss, and this is my argument on Tulsa, they've run off five straight wins, but they also...
Chad is arguing for Temple. I'd like to make that. I'd like to point that out.
I want to put this in here. They are now sitting here at 6-0 against the four best teams in the conference besides themselves. Only one game left at Tulsa, the 23rd. They have a chance. They win that one, they'll have swept them all. Now, they can really change their profile. They're playing Villanova this week, a Big Five out-of-conference rivalry. You know, they win that game, forget. I don't think there's anybody in the country that's going to say they don't belong in the field. But even
there's another funny thing that I listed in reference to Temple. Do you know who their best win is once you get past those six notable wins in the American?
Hold on.
Dickinson.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah, well, Minnesota, Fairleigh Dickinson, those are fairly even.
Minnesota is about 30 points lower than Fairleigh Dickinson right now if you go to our other friend Warren's page.
They beat LaSalle, and LaSalle beat Dayton, but okay, yeah, I give you that. They did nothing non-conference, but in conference, they have dominated the top teams of this conference, dominated as in undefeated against the top teams of this conference, and that's why I am on the Temple bandwagon, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, boy, they really dominated some mediocre teams. I actually like Temple, but I'm not big on the. Well, SMU is good. They would be for real if they were eligible.
Over in the we don't have very much time left here. I know we spent a lot of time with Jerry, and we do appreciate that he came on, and want to thank you. But one other conference I wanted to hit on, or two others maybe, the SEC, first of all. Kentucky, I believe, was in Jerry's bracket as a 4 seed. I think I have them as a 5 seed this week. John, you have them either a 4 or a 5 as well. This team has really started to play pretty well right now. And maybe it was thanks to John Calipari himself throwing out 2 minutes into a game.
Channeling his inner Norman Dale, John Calipari gets tossed. After they called a foul on South Carolina,
I believe he thought it was actually should have been a flagrant foul. He thought it was that offensive of a foul. They just called it as a normal foul, and that's why he blew his top. But it may have also been something that he planned to do heading right into the game. I don't know.
Yeah.
It kind of had that feeling, didn't it?
It yes, not even kind of.
Yeah, they certainly ran the picket fence around South Carolina all day.
Wow, they curb stomped them. It was a thrashing. I don't know if I was more impressed by that than I think I was than when they went to Kansas and took them to overtime while being in foul trouble. What a showing. It really was.
Also, the other conference that we think we need to spend the last few moments on here.
5 of 6, by the way. That was your 1 seed. Remember that, Chad? Remember?
I think that was Lee Delvecchio. I edited my name out of that podcast.
Oh, okay. All right. I just like pointing out every week how bad A&M is playing.
I think let's talk just a little bit of ACC, too, before we call it quits. And, Joby, you're not going to talk about Virginia just totally destroying John Salika's favorite venereal disease tonight. but we have a game of somewhat note coming up on Wednesday night here. It's a bit of a big deal between two teams that have never met in the NCAA tournament.
They haven't?
No, they haven't, David. This is absolutely amazing. They have never played each other in the NCAA tournament, but it has the entire week named after, and that's this Duke Carolina game coming up. And I just want to get each of your thoughts on this rivalry and on this game that's coming up this week, because I guess it is a pretty big deal. David, let me start with you.
Well, for starters, I'd kind of forgotten about it. So do we not have rivalry week anymore? Because, again, anything that happened to be played the week Duke and North Carolina were playing was instantly deemed part of rivalry week, even if they weren't really rivals at all. Like, I remember Xavier and Georgia playing one year and then running a promo about what this big rivalry between the two were. I don't know, but I'm watching Kansas and Oklahoma State, and frankly enough, it's not rivalry week.
Well, I will give ESPN credit, actually. They started it off with a 1 o'clock game today, LIU-Brooklyn and St. Francis-Brooklyn. That is a rivalry. That is worth it, and it is rivalry week. But, Joby, your thoughts on the upcoming game this week? I know you're the RACC
guy. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if they're going to let Grayson Allen take 8 steps every time he gets the ball, then, you know.
Do we want to talk about the controversy a little too here?
No.
There's no controversy. It was a bad call. It was the incorrect call. No controversy at all. It was wrong.
If North Carolina brings the game that he did against Pitt, this is going to be over and over quick. North Carolina, I think, it depends which team comes. I mean, is it the North Carolina team that almost lost to Boston College? Yeah, you know. I think that's where you pay attention. Duke's going to be producing what Duke does, which is going to be about a 4, 5, 6 seed level team. North Carolina can be the best team in the country. They can be losing to Northern Iowa and barely beating Boston College. And so unless Ingram really pops up, I think North Carolina's going to be ready, and North Carolina's probably going to run them.
John, do you agree?
I thought rivalry week started last night when Miami knocked off Florida State. And yes, even though the U is a basketball school now, I think it is safe to call that a rivalry now.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Any other games coming up this week, John, that you're looking at?
Well, I'm looking at one from my own school in a couple nights, even though it's on another network. But Xavier and Providence has also become a nice, quiet little rivalry in the Big East.
What is the most heated Big East? Is it still Nova Georgetown? Is that the one of the hottest temperature? Because I don't think the Big East has really developed hate for each other yet.
It's one that ought to be the highest rivalry, but Georgetown just hasn't been on the same level that Villanova was. But right. What's funny is Villanova has not been on top for this long in the original incarnation of the Big East. That's what Georgetown was in the early to mid-80s.
Yeah.
I really thought it was DePaul St. John's. You guys really shocked me.
Coming up in a couple nights as well.
I mean, they've sold dozens of tickets for that one.
They sold dozens. Yeah.
Dozens.
But on that note, let's run through it for any final thoughts here. I think we covered a lot tonight, and I want to start once again by thanking Jerry for joining us. But John, let me start with you. Any final thoughts for the evening?
It was great to hear his train of thought when it comes to how he selects the teams and not just go through a bias from the network, which you may see from other bracketologists out there.
Or a bias towards the school that he went to, as well. I'll refer to a certain Lee Del Vecchio in his brackets. Joey, you're fine.
I have Virginia's a two seed. Don't worry, there are two, not a one right now. But no, it was great having Jerry on, and look forward to seeing March come up and pay attention to Frank Haith. Huh? Okay.
David, let's end it with you.
Well, again, I just wanted to say that for the longest time, I thought there should be one person in charge of all of college basketball. We talked about how conferences need to rework their tournaments. We talked about how the committee needs to select teams. One person should be in charge of all this, and I think that person should be me. You know, I've been saying that for the longest time. I would fix everything. That's one of the things. Secondly, I found it, I think he's right when you say that there is no one biggest thing for the committee, because the committee is 10 different people. It changes from year to year. We've pointed this out before, but if you look at a lot of the schools that have ADs on the committee, they did go on the road. That was kind of refreshing, and it gave me pause, because when I look at teams, I know this comes as no surprise to you, there is one thing that I start off looking for more than anything else, and it's road wins. But maybe the committee doesn't, and maybe that's why people that are trying to guess the committee, like Jerry, like John Tytel, and like a few others, are overvaluing teams more than they should, because the committee will likely overvalue them more than they should. And the reason they'll do that is because I'm not in charge to do it correctly.
All right, well, apparently David Griggs is going to be running the NCAA in a few years here. We'll keep an eye out for that. Yeah. And at that which point, we may need to find a new entity to run all of college basketball.
Hey, it wouldn't be a first time a puppet was running the NCAA.
On that note, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Thanks to Jerry Palm again, and we'll talk to you again real soon.